Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I'm your co-host, Daniel Fisher, here with the president of Candyland, Mike Perna.
You even had time to work on that one.
You know, I'm running on very little sleep here nowadays.
I mean, there's hardly an excuse for that sort of shenanigans.
Come on now. You realize, like, this is already, like, 30 minutes past my normal bedtime now. And, you know, I'm just tired. And I don't get to paint anymore because of the wee little one. I love him. But it's hard to paint one-handed while holding a baby in the other hand. I have tried. I am not kidding.
I could see you doing it. I could even see you, like, busting out the airbrush and be like, nah. Hold still. Hold your breath.
No, I won't do the airbrush with him in my arms. Now, if he's over in his little thing, I'll let him do it. And I do use acrylics, and I don't use any dangerous airbrush chemicals. Most of my stuff's made from stuff that comes out of the tap and other things. But yeah.
Let's be clear, you're not actively trying to harm your child.
No. There's probably more harm for me with that, but still. Well, what have you been playing? What have you been doing? I haven't heard from you in like 2 weeks because you've been so busy with life.
Look, there's no air quotes about it, man. I am trying to put together the stuff for the Game Church Academy, which I will be speaking at. I am educating the video gaming masses about the wonder that is tabletop.
Oh, wow.
So, I'm having a bunch of fun prepping for that one. It's going to be an entertaining discussion. I really think that there's some potential to I'm not, like, introducing tabletop to these guys, because a lot of the people that'll be there are people who have a vested interest in the tabletop world. But one of the focal point of what I'm going to be talking about is the idea that even as connected as we are, as digital stuff allows for gaming to happen, you know, in ways that it used to never be able to do. Like the idea that we run role-playing games on Roll20, Tabletop Simulator, that kind of stuff. But even as that's becoming more available and more prevalent, that there is still something about getting some people together in the same room to be around the table or to do some old-school couch co-op kind of video games.
Oh, yeah.
So it'll be fun to kind of break that down. I've pretty much nailed down my outline, which I've gone over it and gone over it a couple of times. I'll probably go over it again between now and the beginning of June when this takes place. But I'm very excited about the event. And it's fun, too, because one of the things that people are planning, I don't know if I'll participate because they've got me, you know, being the guy, apparently, for tabletop stuff. Apparently, they, like, want me to do things at this event.
Yeah, well, I mean, they do consider you, like, the ambassador of boards.
Somehow, I talked myself into running a D&D 5th edition one-shot, which I haven't even begun to think about yet.
Well, you got to take up all of their devices. You can't let them sit with their devices.
I'm not that hardcore about it. I have kind of a two-pronged thing with that. One, anymore, there are a lot of apps that help, like dice rollers and stuff.
Well, let's just put it this way. If anybody brings a Switch to the table,
it away. That's a different story. Yeah. But I'm not the kind of guy who says you must hand in your phone. Because, really, if I'm doing my job, they're not going to want their phone.
Yeah.
Like, granted, nobody's perfect and everybody is super, you know, going to be able to be distracted. I mean, we live in an age where the fidget cube is a thing. So, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm going to completely have everyone's attention all the time. But if, like, 3/4 of the table is not paying attention to the game, I need to step up.
Yeah.
But with all that stuff, one of the things that's going to be happening, and I think I'm probably going to be more of a, I'm going to hear the stories about it later than actually participate, is Google being what it is, a bunch of guys discovered that there are not one, but I think 3 different escape rooms within a reasonable driving distance of the hotel. So I think there's going to be a pilgrimage to go out and try to do an escape room.
Oh, wow. That sounds awesome. I'm really jealous. If I could do it, I would be there this year. But
I was actually surprised at the sheer number of escape rooms that are relatively close to me. I knew of like one or two, but there's like seven.
Wow. We got one up the street from my house that the kids are like, let's go. I'm like, you're going to be 18. What?
Yeah. No, it's, they really are a lot of fun. And if you're listening and you have no idea what an escape room is, you know, one, you need to look it up because holy cow. But escape rooms are generally, most places have more than one. Just because it's hard to maintain a business when you only have one.
Yeah.
Usually they'll run two or three or even, you know, some of them. There's one by me. Oh, my goodness. It runs like eight. But it's different scenarios and it's all filled with puzzle stuff. If you've been playing video games since back in the day of like Flash browser games, there was an old thing called Escape the Room and you'd have to like find the key that opened up this box, which led to this note and all. So it's that kind of thing. You're trying to put together these puzzles and each room is themed and you have a set time limit. And if you don't get it done by that time limit, you lose. And an interesting thing I've discovered with these is that they have this group picture where you either hold up signs that say, we're awesome and we won, or you'll hold up signs like we suck and, and we all died. I'm interested to see, one, how they are, because the ones that are going to be near where we're staying are not ones that are close by me, because this event is not going to be super far away from me. It's about 40 minutes away, but 40 minutes is enough that I don't know the area real well, so I don't know these escape rooms. I don't know if they're going to be good or not.
See, 40 minutes to me is me driving somewhere to eat dinner.
Yeah, no, there is that too, but usually if I'm doing that, it's in the opposite direction of this 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So there's that. I am putting together stuff for TavernCon, which reminds me, I still have to do some more design work for that and recruit more volunteers. We are very blessed this year in the fact that there are a ton of people who are telling me they're excited about it. There are people who I've never even seen before who are like, oh, I can't wait to come this year. I'm like, okay, that is a huge blessing. The downside is that most of my local volunteers are of the college age kind of variety. And a number of them have come back to me saying, oh yeah, my family's traveling, I can't be there. Or, oh, hey, I'm going to be in a wedding, I can't do that. Or, oh, hey, I'm like, oh good. So we have more people coming than ever and fewer people able to volunteer. Yeah. This is not a perfect storm of awesome.
A couple more years, they'll be like, we just had a kid, we can't come.
Yeah. Oh no, that's not an excuse, because Sean brings his whole family to this.
Yeah, but Sean lives in the area.
There is that. So I have been running ragged, but I have still been able to put together some good gaming in. I actually have definitely two, and I believe a third game that I've been playing for a while, but I don't think I've ever mentioned on the podcast yet. So I have plenty of things to talk about. Daniel, is this the part where you want to, are we going to have a come to Jesus meeting about the games that you've been playing recently before we get into the stuff I've been doing? I think we need to have a heart to heart here.
So, as you know, we have family game night at our home every Friday night. It's actually, we call it Fisher Family Fun Night. And so whoever's turn it is, they get to pick what we do, whether we watch a movie, go out, play putt-putt, play games. And for the last 2 weeks, it was my daughter's, then my wife's turn, and the next one's mine. But so my daughter picked Face Ten, which is a good game. I really enjoy it. My wife picked Uno. And so I've got to play a bunch of card games that, you know, and I did get to play some Pokemon with my son.
Now, just because of the fact that I know that there are people who listen to us who don't know anything about gaming. Now, there are going to be a large amount of people who, when you mentioned Phase 10, are going to be screaming at whatever listening device they are currently tuning in with.
Right.
But for those who might not know, what is Phase 10?
So it's 10 different phases. So you have cards that are ranked, they're numbered like 1 through 9, and then they have colors. So each phase, you have to meet a certain requirement. Like the first one, I think, is like have a run of three, which is like 1, 2, 3 in all the same color. Or no, just 1, 2, 3. And then like sets are like, they have to be all like nines or, you know, and so each different one has different things you need to do. So like, you gotta get the first one before you can get to the second one. But the first person that runs out of cards ends a round. And then you have to take, and how many cards are still in your hand, you have to count points. So the game ends after the 10th phase. But the winner is not the person that gets to the phase first. It's the person that has the least amount of points. So there is some strategy involved in it.
Now, I know some people rage against phase 10. I've never been that guy. I mean, I think it's fine. I can't say more than it's fine. But it's fine.
I think it's fun, especially with kids. But we did something on my wife's turn with Uno that we normally don't do. And because my wife is a real stickler about the rules. But, you know, almost every family has house rules and the rules that you grew up playing with. And so we decided to implement a house rule that we both had growing up. And that is, if you lay down a draw two on a person, and if they had a draw two, they would skip them and go to the next person. They had to draw four.
Oh, wow.
And then if you had a wild plus, you know, draw four, and it worked the same way with that, but you couldn't like have a draw two and then a wild on top of it. It had to be matching. So it made for the longest game ever of Uno. And then I added another house rule that came from my home that my wife didn't have. If you did not say Uno when you were down to one card, the discard pile now became your hand.
Oh, no.
So I got my son with that. It was my daughter. Oh, man, it was so hilarious. I was sitting there just watching her. She had that one card in her hand, and I looked over at my wife. My wife laid down a card. I said, hold on, Isabel, you didn't say Uno, so this is now your cards. And then I took that card my wife had and put it down and started a new pile. And my daughter about cried. I'm like, you agreed to this rule. But it made for an hour and a half hand of Uno.
No. No.
Sometimes you've got to experiment with things like this.
Oh, I appreciate a good experiment, but the second we hit the hour mark, I'd be like, no, we're playing Uno. No.
But you know, tomorrow should make up for it. We got small group, and I'm either getting to play Dark Souls or Fury of Dracula, which I just finally cracked the plastic on this week. So
now I'm like, I've seen Fury of Dracula. I've even seen it played. Dark Souls, I haven't seen other than like the occasional video about it. So I'm really curious as to what you think about that one.
Well, I know as soon as you open the box, it says you died.
Yes.
It's like, great.
Every person I've ever talked to that has played the video game, they're like, is the board game anything like the video game? And I just, you know, just shown them the pictures of all the unboxings of you have died. And yeah, they just go nuts.
Well, this is the thing, though. And I'm going to get a lot of flack on this after everybody goes through it. I hated Dark Souls.
Really?
It was loaned to me, but he's like, this is my favorite game. You're going to play. He loaned it to me a year ago. It's still on my shelf. I played maybe a total of 30 minutes because I couldn't even make it past the first level because I kept dying.
Oh, it's brutal. There's no doubt about it.
I'm going back to Fallout. I'm sorry. And put New Vegas back in.
Yeah, no. There. You want to talk about a gaming organization that, you know, the whole get good mentality. I haven't played much, but what I have played, I enjoyed the heck out of. And I think if I had a controller for my computer, because I do have the first one on PC, but oh my goodness, is the port of that game terrible. So I think if I had a controller, I would be much more inclined to play that because I enjoy a challenge. I mean, my favorite games are, you know, survival stuff that, you know, no human being could ever possibly survive this stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's not bad, but it's just that game is worse than survival. I mean, I've been known to throw Minecraft in hardcore mode. I know it's not the same guys, but yeah. Still, you know.
And everyone who ever plays video games ever just screamed in terror. All right. So before we have the entirety of the internet collapse in around us, let me talk about a couple of the games that I've been playing. The first one, which I've been playing a while, and y'all, if I did mention this on a previous podcast, I'm going to apologize. I didn't have time to go backtracking through the back catalog here, but man, have I been enjoying the heck out of it. It's called Paperback. Daniel, do you know anything about Paperback?
No, I do not. Why don't you tell me a little bit about it?
Paperback is a deck building game where you are pretty much playing as a writer, and the way you get the currency to get more stuff is by creating words. It's basically Scrabble, the deck building game. And so the cards range, you know, different letters and things, but some of them have special abilities. Like, if your word is less than four letters long, you get a bonus, or for every card left in your hand this time, you'll get extra cards in their next hand. Some of them just have a bunch of points. Some of them have multiple letters on the same card, which seem like a good idea until you start getting, you know, into words and you're like, crap, I want one of these letters, not both of them. And you also have basically wild cards. The way it works is that you're pretty much going to play your words, gather in the currency that those cards give you to buy new letters, etc. And you keep going until you have you've gotten rid of two piles of what are basically the covers of books that you've written. And the artwork, this is great because the artwork is old school, like pulp fiction kind of stuff. So you've got like romance books and treasure, you know, hunting books and cheesy pulpy sci-fi books.
I love that font, by the way.
Oh yeah. No, everything about it is amazing. The thing I like about it is that sometimes a lot of deck builders, when you're buying point cards, they're basically useless. They're fodder. In Paperback, these cards are not fodder. They are wild cards. Mm-hmm. So you're basically adding wild cards to your deck as you're adding points. So that's a nice little twist on things. Another way you can get points is there is a pile of communal cards, which, like, everybody can use them. They're pretty much vowels. Mm-hmm. However, if you use a certain number of letters in your word, you get to keep that letter. So, like, the first time it's seven. If you make a seven-letter word, if you're the first person to make that seven-letter word, you will get to keep that vowel. And it's worth 5 points. So not only are you adding a vowel, you're getting 5 points. Next, it's 8 letters, then 9 letters, and whatever. If you're getting more than 9 letters, you're a hero. Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, this game is a ton of fun. I originally got it because my wife is an incredible word nerd, and I can get it in digital form, which, you know, is something that I'm discovering that Susan is much more inclined to play a digital game, which doesn't require setup or teardown and can be played in bed. So I got it for her. She enjoyed the heck out of it and still playing it with me. It's a blast. It really is incredibly entertaining. They just finished the Kickstarter for what they're calling a pre-quill. Huh? Huh? Like the writing implement? Huh? But hardback is the new one that came out, and that adds some other stuff on top of this. I wish... Having figured out that Susan really enjoys this, there's part of me that wished I could have gotten in on that Kickstarter and kind of gotten some of the cool stuff there, but I don't have any money anyway. Yeah. So I'm happy with my, you know, $2 digital form of it, but I have been playing the crap out of it. I'm pretty confident that if I have the opportunity in the future to get the physical rendition of Paperback, I will do that in a heartbeat because, wow, I've been having a blast with this. Speaking of digital games, I have also been playing Patchwork, which I am so late to the game on Patchwork, but wow, I'm enjoying this this is a two-player game, and the theme, it really is one of those games where I'll explain the theme and I'm like, I'm like, no, really, it really is awesome because the theme is you're making a quilt. No, no, really, that's the theme. You're making a quilt.
Okay, now I've just got to mention. Okay, like, so I grew up with my grandmother, and long nights I would be sitting there watching TV with her, and she would be quilting. Mm-hmm. So to me, it was boring. So how's a game about making a quilt exciting?
Okay, so here's how it is. One, you don't have you basically have a blank kind of player board. It's a grid that you have to fill in. Your goal is to fill up as much of this as possible because every blank space that's left in that grid is minus points to your total. So you're trying to fill up as much of that as possible, but you can't just pick like the perfect piece. You only have certain pieces available at a time, and each one of those pieces has basically two costs to it, not just one. The first cost is pretty simple. There's a currency. It's buttons because it's quilting.
Yeah.
So there's a cost in buttons that you have to pay to get that piece. Also, if you want to put that piece into your game, onto your board, there is a movement cost, because the reason this game is quick and is relatively easy to time out how long it's going to play is that there's this kind of snake looking board that kind of spirals in on itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to move your little icon around this spiral ring. And when you get to the center, you're done. So the number, like, so each piece, you know, putting a big piece with lots of buttons on it would be great, but you have to understand that you can only do that so many times before you are racing to the center of the board, and there's a whole lot of empty space still there on your quilt left.
Yeah.
So you're trying to balance between getting the really cool pieces that are going to get you more currency and get you more stuff coming in and covering up a lot of your board with the fact that you want to try and make as little movement as possible to make more moves total. And there's all sorts of stuff that goes along. You know, you get buttons back for every button that's on your board once you cross certain parts of that little movement board. There are certain little one square quilting blocks that, uh-huh, that are kind of designed to fill in the little blank spaces.
Yeah.
Because you will always have little blank spaces.
It's kind of like Tetris.
It really is. There's no like about it. It is Tetris in board game form. You are and trust me, it is just as easy to screw up horribly and put a piece in a spot where you're like, you know, you think it looks good, but then later on in the game you're like, oh, if only I didn't put that there, then this would have worked better.
That's why you have the pieces on the side in the game. You knew it was coming next.
Well, and that happens here too. You can kind of plan ahead. You only have certain ones available to you. But you can kind of look ahead and go, okay, if I take this one, then he'll probably take that one. Then I'll be able to take that one. Like, you can kind of plan ahead. And another thing that has a neat little strategic element to this game is that the pieces kind of show up in a line. And if you, say, take the third in the line, the other two are gone. So even if, you know, that piece would be great, you might want to take one further down because that will eliminate the opportunity for other people to get those. Your opponent won't be able to get those pieces either.
There you are, power playing a game about making a quilt.
Oh, trust me, dude. this game, I have seen people get super cutthroat about patchwork. It's insane.
Oh, wow.
But it's a great little two-player game, and I like the fact that it kind of has that built-in, this game will only last maybe a half hour tops. Because of that whole, once you get to the center of the movement board, you're done.
That's a lunch break game right there.
Yeah, no, it you know that it will be fairly quick because you're not going to have those Uno rules which make it go an hour and a half. It will end, and it will end reasonably quickly.
Try Uno that way. Just try it.
No.
And see how you like it.
No, 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 no,
yes,
no.
Yes,
no.
You want to.
You can tell me that as much as you want. It's not going to work. But what I do want to tell you about is that it finally happened.
You got Needlepoint, the game played?
No. Though I'm sure that game does exist. I'm sure somewhere out there that's happening. No, the game that I have been waiting. I've been waiting for years to play this game. That's not Scythe? No, not Scythe. I've only been waiting a year to play Scythe. No. I've been waiting because when Risk Legacy first happened and then Pandemic Legacy happened, one of the designers of the game, Rob Daviau, had always said, I had this idea for a Legacy-style game, but I wasn't able to make it happen. So he kind of used Risk Legacy and Pandemic Legacy to figure out how to make a Legacy game work. He doubled back and finished the original game that gave him the inspiration for all these other things, Seafall. I finally, after what must be like 4 years of waiting, I have played Seafall.
Was it everything that your heart desired?
It kind of was.
Oh, man.
Now, this one's going to be...
And you know my rant about Legacy games.
It's well, just, you hate card destruction. You hate, you know, anything that's going to ruin pieces.
Yeah, I mean, when we go to play a game at our house, I wipe the table off, make sure no food or drink, because I have kids. This happens. Trust me, folks. When you have kids, there's food everywhere. And then I go and then dry the table off, because, you know, if a card gets wet, you know, it pulls the water in and it gets all warped and just it just bothers me.
Yeah, I have no such problem with games. I am a big proponent of the idea that as long as we're still able to read the cards and we're still having fun, everything's fine. So there were times when I was ripping cards with glee. I'm like, yes, this is happening. It's one of those things where I cannot, I there's so many things I want to tell you about, but I can't. Part of that.
I know, because it's part of the game.
Part of that is because of the fact that we only got to really, this was our first session, so we really only got to learn the game and play through the prologue.
I listened to the Dice Tower, and like, they've gotten to a point where if they talk about a Legacy game, they talk about it at the end of the show.
Yes.
So they're like, we're going to talk about a Legacy game now. If you're playing this game and you don't want to know what happens, you can quit. And that's kind of a cool aspect of the game. But, I mean, it's just the destruction. Like, and do they make reset kits?
No.
I mean, it's what I figured.
Resetting the game involves buying another copy of the game.
Right.
But here's some things I'll say about Seafall that will be nothing spoilery at all. Because, as I'm saying, I want people to play this game because, holy crap, I enjoyed the heck out of it. So, one caveat. I have only played the prologue. So, if, like, something happens on game 8 that ruins things, I don't know about that yet. So, you can take that for what it is. Here's what I will say. I totally understand every person who came out of Seafall going, I'm not a fan of this. I totally understand that. Because in a lot of ways, it's a slower kind of ramp up than any other game you're going to play.
Right.
And I think one of the things that did a disservice to Seafall was that we had not even Risk Legacy. Risk Legacy was fine, but Seafall came out after Pandemic Legacy. And Pandemic Legacy is a force of nature. Like, that game went from brand new to number one on BGG in like a month and a half.
Yeah, and that's like one of the only ones I really would ever want to play because I do like Pandemic. I think it would make a good storyline.
Right. And so the fact that this came out after Pandemic Legacy, I think that they did a disservice because I think a lot of people went into Seafall going, oh my goodness, this is going to be Pandemic Legacy with pirates. And it really isn't. It really isn't at all. I was about to say, what were you going to say?
It's just, yeah. I just, this is me. It's because I'm very frugal with money, too. And you know this. I just can't see spending $60 on a game that I could potentially have to throw in the trash after, like, two sessions.
One, that's what sales are for. We got ours for $30. Two, if you have, like, we're playing with four guys. If you split the cost across four guys, it's really not that bad. And I want you to, like, your collection isn't as big as some others, but I want you to think. I want you to look around behind you right now because, you know, I want you, to
see,
look.
You see my stack.
I want you to look and see how many of those games you've honestly played more than, let's just give it, five times.
Well, that's rough. There's games I haven't even opened yet.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So yes, I understand the one and done frustration.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact I have games on my shelf that I haven't played more than, you know, half dozen times. This game, potentially, if you go from beginning to end, you're going to play 15, 16 times.
I can't see this as like a family heirloom. You know, it gets passed down when a parent dies, but like, we played this for years.
And no, I have straight up said that if none of the other guys want it, when we're done, I'm going to frame our freaking board. Because this stuff is really... So let me get to some of the non-spoilery versions of discussing what this game is like. A lot of it you're looking at a pick up and deliver style kind of economic game with exploration in it and a little bit of punch to the face.
Yeah.
Because you guys are pirates, but if you start going attacking settlements, then you're giving what's called enmity. And enmity only makes your life harder. Because if another person has enmity with you, then they can smack you with no recourse. Like, they can just say, like, you started this, boom, and just smack you across your face. If you do a island, every time you want to try and explore, every time you want to try and get, you know, products from those guys, it becomes harder if the island people hate you. So, yes, there is raiding and there is combat, but really it's more about, okay, I'm going to send these guys out to go exploring, to find more resources. I'm going to take those resources home. I'm going to use those resources. I'm going to put some in my warehouse. I'm going to sell them. I'm going to use that money to buy, you know, a new advisor. I'm going to use that thing to upgrade my ship. I'm going to use it. Really is. It's a pick up and deliver game. And I'm not always keen on pick up and deliver games, but this one I really, really got into. And I think part of it is that idea of the unknown. When you go explore an island, you really don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
The likelihood that you're going to succeed is high, because the way it works is that there's an explore value and you roll dice equal to your ship's explore value and you get successes. Now, as long as you get a success, the likelihood is you're going to succeed. Unless, like, there's two ways to fail. If you literally roll no successes, then you failed. It's garbage. Or if the difference between the number of successes you rolled and the target number is higher than three. Because if your ship, at least at the beginning of the game, takes three damage, that ship sinks. And you have to basically bring it back to port and fix it. And so, like, you're more than likely gonna find something. And then the thing I love is that every exploration thing had a choose your own adventure element to it. It's the same reason why I like Ryan Lockett's games, like Above and Below and Near and Far and all that stuff. Because it basically says, here's your story. You can do this or you can do this. And depending on which one you do, you're gonna have a different result. And the thing that I really enjoyed about Seafall was the fact that the guys I was playing with, I think this one really does demand player buy-in. Like, we really got into it. Like, my guy, each region has kind of a backstory. And the backstory for the one that I picked, I'm just going to put it out there. I love naming stuff. And so the fact that you get to name your region, you get to name your pirate, you get to name your ships, I heck yes. So, I'm from the region of Dawnfire now, and what the story of this is that these guys were beat down, they were persecuted, they were chased, and they're just trying to find a new life. So every time I went to an island, and I found myself saying, you could either really hate the natives and do this thing, or you can placate the natives and do this thing. I always picked the side of the natives because I figured that my guy was that kind of person. He wouldn't want to, like, you know, go from being oppressed to oppressing somebody else.
Right.
Another guy that I was playing with, everything about him, he said that he was a colonialist. He was there to just completely just take over everything. Everything he got a chance to name, he named it after himself. Like, everything, like, he was that guy. So anytime it came to, do you want to abuse the natives or help the natives? It was always just abuse the crap out of the natives. Like, forget these guys. I want their resources. I don't care who they are. Like, because that was his character. It's what he did. So I had a ton of fun with this game. It says something that in the prologue, there are four islands, and the prologue ends when all four islands have been named by players. I didn't name a single island, and I still had a blast playing it. And I love it so much. I wish I could talk more about why I love it so much. But part of the reason that I enjoyed it was inextricably linked to not knowing what was happening, not knowing what was coming up next.
I do see that there's some paintable pieces.
Oh, there definitely are some paintable pieces. And there are box of pieces that I haven't even seen yet. There are little boxes full of stuff that we can't open yet because we haven't gotten there. So, yes, because of the fact that I know, especially recently, that people have been buying things because I say they're awesome. Yeah. Caveats like crazy on this one. It's not for everybody. It's not going to be Pandemic Legacy. And, there is a whole lot of card destruction and other shenanigans. But if the idea of setting up a pirate empire, which is not only just going raiding and looting, but also, setting up colonies and creating trade routes and that sort, if that sounds awesome to you, holy crap, do this.
Yeah, it does sound kind of good.
I love the fact that like there are a ton of stickers. Like, you can add islands later on, and you can find out, like, this is a port now, and this has iron, and this has wood, and like all that stuff. Like, you're finding out what has what as you're going along. It's so much fun, and it's so much fun to explore and to kind of, I don't know, just expose yourself to this unknown mystery of this game. But yeah, no, I'm having a blast. And I'm sure that as time goes by, we're not going to be, because these are also my D&D guys. So as it is, we've mostly gotten together like once a month. So yeah. I don't know exactly how long it'll take us to get through these games, but I know that after we were done, at least two of the guys got back to me saying, man, when are we playing again?
You'll probably be retired by the time you get to finish.
You never know. If we can get it to one game a month, then it shouldn't take us too long.
Yeah.
But no, I've been having a blast. And that kind of, as we kind of move into other things and the quote unquote deep spiritual things, I kind of wanted to use this kind of as the springboard into what I wanted to talk about there. Because I think there's something that, has been a part of what we do at Inroads pretty much since the beginning. So, like, I think I wrote the article like 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's something that has been a part of what we do, and it's something that is just kind of, we just say it and we say the words, but we haven't really dwelt on it a little bit. And I kind of want to look at it because there's a thing that it's a sticky post on our website. So it's, no matter when you view us, whenever you go to inroadsministries.com, you'll always see it. It's called the no preaching rule.
Very important rule. Very.
The basic tenets of the no preaching rule is that you will never hear a sermon at an En-ROADS event that we didn't tell you ahead of time that you should be expecting. Kind of the more practical explanation of that is that we always want, like, we don't hide the fact that we're a Christian organization. We don't hide the fact that ministry is our name and our goal. Sharing the gospel and creating disciples is in our mission statement. Like, none of that is hidden. But we felt it important that we always avoid what we refer to as the Bible bait and switch. Now,
we call it Jesus juking. Then
Jesus juking is another term for it. And I've, for a long time, I was guilty of this too. And it's only been probably within the last like 10 or so years, that I've really gotten it. It's gone from something that is just part of what I've seen, and it became more of a frustration. This idea, it is especially true in youth ministry, but I've seen everybody do it at one point or another. It's the plan of, oh, hey, get your friends to come to this cool event. You know, we're going to have like a fair, or we're going to have this cool thing, or we're going to have a baseball player come and talk. And yes, do this. Here's cool thing A. And then about halfway through cool thing A, and it's funny because somebody, I was talking about it recently with somebody, and they're like, yeah, you know, it's always that time when in the middle of nowhere, a guy comes out on stage with a guitar and he sits down and he just starts strumming on this guitar and everyone's wondering what the heck is going on. And before you know it, you're in a sermon.
It's like, hey, free pizza. Oh, let's tell you about Jesus first.
Right. And every time I've seen that, it always reminds me of timeshare stuff. Like, have you ever heard of those timeshare sales pitches? Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, you can totally get a vacation or get a chance to win a boat, but you have to sit there and endure this sales pitch about timeshares down in Florida in order to do that. They get you in the door by giving you the cool thing, not telling you the fact that they're not going to let you go until you've heard their sales pitch numerous times. You know, that it's always been annoying because, you know, it's one, it makes this really awkward moment, and it also has this really bizarre understanding of what the heck evangelism is actually supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And so the one thing that I've had to explain a bunch of times when I talk about the no preaching rule is the fact that, yes, our events are outreach events. Our events are designed to share the gospel and to bring that to people who haven't heard it before. And so people get confused because they say, we're not going to preach a sermon, and yet we're an outreach and an evangelistic thing. And oddly enough, all this talk about Seafall and how excited I am for it and all the games that we talk about on the regular, so much of that ties into it basically as illustrations of why we do the no preaching rule. Because of the fact that, I don't know about you, Daniel, but when I love a thing and when that thing is important to me, I talk about it.
Fantasy Grounds.
Yeah, like there have seriously become, heck, it's practically gotten
running jokes.
It's practically gotten to the point of memes in the tavern now.
Yes.
If anybody sees a joke about a bard, I get tagged. If anybody wants to talk about Fantasy Grounds,
I get tagged.
You get tagged. And Jeff's got his too. Like, every one of us have this thing, like, say X, so and so will want to be tagged in it because we can't shut up about it. It's always there. So, my thing has always been, why do we think that's not the case with Jesus? Why do we think that we have to manufacture times when we talk about Jesus? Because if he's important, and if he really has and is transforming our lives, don't you think, on occasion, we might mention him?
Yeah, or that people would see that in us.
Yeah. So, I do want to make one important distinction about the no preaching rule. Before we keep going with this. an important distinction that I always, and the reason we're kind of double backing on this is because every once in a while, I think it's good to kind of re-talk about this. We're not saying we don't talk about faith or religion or God or anything. It's not like I'm hovering around saying, the second you start breaking into this spiritual conversation, I'm going to shut that down. We don't run any of our stuff that way. It's never our intention.
Oh, yeah.
The big thing is that we will not be the instigator of that sermon. I'm fully up for people being who they are. And so that means that, yeah, when I say, you know, oh man, we really had some answered prayer the other day. It's not me setting up for the gospel pitch. It's because God moved and I love talking about that. It's not something that has an agenda of, hey, I'm going to go somewhere. It's because of the fact that somebody brought something up or somebody asked me how my week was, or it comes from a natural place.
Right. It's out of habit too.
Yeah. It's just, I tell everybody that has ever volunteered for an Inroads event that I've been a part of, you need to be who you are. You need to share what God's doing in you. Not as a selling point, not as a sales pitch. You just need to be talking about what God means to you. And so, yeah, we don't have the sermon time. We don't have a 20-minute message about why you need Jesus. We literally have a group of volunteers who love Jesus and who want to share that with other people without any kind of, you know, agenda behind it. Without any, and I will clarify that too. Saying that there's no agenda, like I said, our goal is to share Christ with people.
Yeah, so, we have an agenda.
So there is an agenda. What I'm saying is sharing without an agenda is that we're not sharing to get there. We're not sharing as a means to an end. We're not trying to, like I said, manufacture that place. Our goal is to build relationships. There's never going to be a gate that says, if you don't trust Jesus by this point, you can't come back. Or we're not going to care about you.
Right.
And that's where this comes from. Because of the fact that we think that, again, if God's moving and if God's doing stuff, you talk about it. So, I don't know, I could think of a number of things in my own life that there have just been times when people will be like, you know, what's going on? Like, how are you doing? And, recently with, you know, I can even say this recently, if y'all have listened to the podcast that I've been doing on weeks alternating between Game Store Profits, the podcast I do called Barden Bible, it was an episode or two ago that I shared the fact that I don't bounce back emotionally. I deal with situational depression. And there have been times when people have come up to me and they're like, how are you doing? And there have been times when I'm like, honestly, I'm not okay. But, you know, but at the same point, I'll say, you know, God is still doing what he does. I will cite, you know, from the book of Daniel, where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say, even if God, you know, God can save us here, but even if he doesn't, he's still God and we're not going to worship you. And those are all things that come from a place. It comes from a place when I struggle. It comes from that place of hurt and pain. And it comes to a place where I can still trust Jesus, that he's worth trusting in. None of that was manufactured. It was just where I was. Likewise, when times get rough financially with my wife and I, and money comes from somewhere out of nowhere that we didn't see coming, I'm not saying like Jesus is going, you know, pray to Jesus. He's going to give you that money you need.
Oh yeah.
That has never been, it's never that sales pitch, because good Lord, there have been a lot more times I've prayed for stuff that we need that I didn't get. than times that we did.
Yeah, it's like with our family, like, you know, we had that period where my wife wasn't working for almost 2 years, the first 2 years of my son, Andrew, being born. And, you know, we always look back and reflect on that and thank God for that period, because if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have made it. I mean, we were literally getting checks in the mail. Yeah. Because, like, this weird stuff, like, oh, you overpaid this bill this week, or you did this, or you got a dividend and you passed go, you get $200. I mean, like, you know, this money would come in, and it was God taking care of us, because we would not have been able to meet it after that. And it's just, and that's why I'm telling you now, because, like, that's just something that was in part of my life that God has done, and it excites me. And I tell everybody about that, especially around with my son, because, you know, he's a miracle too. My firstborn son, we tried for him for, I think it was close to 4 years. And, you know, we started, and this is weird, and a lot of people get onto me for this, but we started tithing 10% because we heard a sermon saying if you tithe 10%, you can't outgive God. And the month that we decided that we were going to tithe, we started getting checks in the mail. And at the end of the month, we found out that we were pregnant. And that's one of my favorite stories to tell, because it just gets me excited about what God has done in my life.
I think the big thing here is not, again, it's not about manufacturing.
Yeah.
I was, like, so close to actually being one of the guys who ran the evangelism kind of programs and stuff. The guy who says, this is how you create the spiritual conversation. And it was funny because even when I was doing those, when I was creating those, it was kind of a joke. Because I was running it for, like, high school kids. And they started joking about it. One of the things in that particular program, and I'm not going to name the program because I'm not here to bash anybody. But in that particular program, one of the things was that, you know, you find that point of connection, and then you turn the conversation to spiritual things. And so, like kids would be like going through the grocery store. Hey, that's a lovely head of lettuce you've got there. By the way, have you ever had, you know, ever thought of spiritual things before? Like, and because it felt fake.
Yeah.
And it felt manufactured. It felt like I need to get you to that place so that I can go through my script and make the thing happen. And, you know, one of the things that I mentioned when we talk about, like, the no preaching rule and everything like that is the way I do kind of evangelism has everything to do with two things, none of which even remotely have to do with church or, you know, anything like that. It's a conversation I had with my buddy Zach, and it's the movie The Big Kahuna with Kevin Spacey and Danny DeVito. My buddy Zach, I'm just going to say it. Zach was with me during my jackass phase of Christianity when I got saved at 17 and thought, I can't believe the world doesn't know this. They need to know this now. He endured that aspect of my life.
Yeah.
And as I was coming towards the tail end of it, I'm like, man, I can be obnoxious about this sometimes. So one night we were hanging out and, I said, man, if I overstep and I get really annoying, just let me know. Like, that's not my goal. And he looked at me and he said, if you weren't telling me about this, I'd be upset. Because if you weren't talking to me about this, one of two things is true. Either A, you don't actually believe it, or B, you don't care enough about me that you think I should know about it. The other thing from that movie is there's a speech at the end of it, and there's so much going on that yes, this happens at the end, so technically it's a spoiler, but there's so much going on that even if I tell you this, it's not going to ruin the movie. It's a wonderful, wonderful movie based on a play. But the short version of this plot point is that this one kid was there with some salesmen, the salesmen being Kevin Spacey and Danny DeVito.
Mm-hmm.
And they were there specifically to talk to one guy about their product. But instead of talking to that guy about their product, he talks to him about Jesus. And Danny DeVito's character takes this kid aside and he basically talks to him about what he did and why he was wrong. And the thing that struck me was one particular segment of that message, that this ending kind, it's not really a monologue because it is a dialogue between the two characters, but it's a significant portion of text. And Danny DeVito's character says, when you grab hold of a conversation and twist it, you're no longer having a conversation. You're making a sales pitch. And you are no longer a human being. You're a marketing rep. He says, you selling Jesus is no different than Larry selling industrial lubricant. And that line, I think, in my past experience, has kind of embodied so much of how we treat evangelism. We've gotten it to I need to sell you on Jesus, because this might be the only time I get to talk to you, and I need to sell you Jesus. What can I do to get you in Jesus today?
Yeah, I've been through a lot of training classes like that teach you how to do the perfect pitch and how to get to the point and all this other thing for that conversation.
And again, I think that if God is really important, you don't need to put him in the conversation. He's already there. You just have it becomes less about making sure that your pitch is on and more about just allowing for the confidence in what you believe in to say, yeah, no, this is really cool. This is really awesome. And I know that it's really easy for us to say that. It's really easy for us to say, oh, you know, sure, you can just bring up Jesus whenever. Guys, I'm going to tell you, we come from a long line of nerd. Every voice on this podcast comes from a long line of nerd. And there's an argument going around right now that geek is cool. And I'm here to tell you that is utterly untrue.
Geeky. Real geek is not cool.
Geeky things are cool. Heck, Guardians of the Galaxy just came out, and oh my goodness, geeky things are cool. Geeks, you know, and I cite every terrible stereotype because as much as we hate to admit it, those stereotypes come from a real place. That's not cool. But what happens is that those guys are so passionate that they don't care about being not cool.
Yeah.
Because they are so psyched about whatever it is, whatever their niche is, they are so psyched about it, they really don't care whether you're okay with them or not. And I think if there's any kind of challenge in it, it's the idea that Christ literally offers transformation. Literally, you are different after being confronted with Christ. You get the Holy Spirit and everything is different. Your entire being is changed. It goes well beyond your behavior changed. Because quite frankly, my coming to faith story is boring when it comes to behavior. I was always a good kid. I avoided the stuff that you're supposed to avoid. I was a part of the things that you're supposed to be a part of. Behaviorally, very little change from before I was a Christian to after I was a Christian. However, I will tell you that I'm a completely different person now as opposed to then. My entire state of being is different. And as such, I think that that's worth talking about. I think that's worth getting excited about.
Give me an amen on that.
I will take that amen. I think we need to wrap it up there, literally because we just got the amen.
Yeah, well, it's bedtime. I'm just kidding. No, I enjoy our chats at night.
Thanks. Suck it up, you love it.
I know, and you always get the wonderful message from me at like 5:45 in the morning. I do
get those.
Hey, when I see that green dot on your name, that's when I'm like, bam.
So what are you up to?
Right now, mainly I'm planning some super secret, top secret stuff for next year.
Woo.
That you know about.
I know about.
Yeah, and a few of our other friends know about, and hopefully we'll be able to talk about super secret, top secret stuff soon. That's mainly the number one thing on my radar at the moment, other than getting my children through their last day of school tomorrow and planning out a wonderful summer fun. But I know you've got a lot on your plate right now as well.
I've got a game day this Saturday, which I'm very excited about. Like I said, I'm gearing up for the Academy at the beginning of June, which I'll say the beginning of June, and that sounds really far off, but then I realize that's just a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I really wish I was. I was actually, I told my wife, I was like, you know, if I don't go to Gen Con, can I go to Tavern Con instead? She's like, it's part of it is the fact that the baby was just born. And
yes.
She's like, no. I'm like,
But, so I've got the Academy, then literally the weekend after the Academy, yeah. I've got Tavern Con. I will put out there for everybody who can't be out here in New Jersey. If you can, if you're in the New Jersey area or plan to be on June 10th, please come out. I will be, you know, probably before this episode goes live, I will be posting a thing on our website about Tavern Con and what you can expect and kind of the things that are going to go on there. Tavern Con is our annual fundraiser. It's how we do not everything, but a significant portion of how we do things at the ministry, at least how we can afford them. And, it's just a really good time. It's a laid back event. We don't do a lot of scheduling. It's a lot of just show up and play games and have people, recommend stuff and teach you stuff. It's going to be a really good time. We're going to have folks from the Bodana Group in-house talking about how they use board games and role-playing games in clinical therapy situations. I'm going to have Jason Tagmeyer from Buttonshy, who is going to have a couple prototypes with him, as well as selling a bunch of his wallet games there. There's going to be at least – like, he's not a guest, so I can't say he'll be here from X to X, but I have – seen that Jeff Engelstein, a game designer who lives local to us here, will be in house. It's gonna be a ton of fun, guys. And if you're in the area, you should come out. If not, you can always donate to Inroads. The goal always with these donations is not that we're trying. Nothing ever is going to be hidden behind a paywall. Everything is to do things like when we go to church events that we can pay for things like snacks and stuff like that. We can create this kind of event and not charge any of the churches that we work with. Like, that's the kind of stuff we do. We also do the web hosting for this and for all the other stuff that we've got going on, all of our internet projects. We want to do stuff like we're continuing to get us new gear to make stuff like our YouTube videos better. So all that stuff goes on to make content for you guys and to create local events where our team is. So there's two of us here in New Jersey, Daniel's in Tennessee and Romo's out in California. So we want to keep doing more stuff there. Yeah. You can go to our website. If you're not going to be in for Tavern Con, you can donate by going to inroadsministries.com and click on the little donate button. That'll hook you up with the instructions on how to make that happen. We're always thankful for you guys. We're always thankful for the regulars and everything that you guys do to support what we're doing. We are quickly approaching 500 people in the tavern, and that boggles my mind. And yeah. I don't think I have anything. I mean, I could go on for days about all the stuff that I have going on right now, but I think that is all the relevant stuff. So I think we'll wrap it up there. So always remember, folks, God is the game master. No matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.